Chef John Falls welcoming you to Starring It Up, the best tasting show on radio. From the swamps and bayous of South Louisiana, thanks for joining us in our little piece of culinary heaven where good cooking is just a way of life. Mornings begin here with a roux simmering in a cast iron pot, and our evenings end with thoughts of what we're going to cook tomorrow. All right, everybody, welcome to Starring It Up. Welcome to the kitchen table. It's so nice to have all of you with us today, and I'd like to welcome Michelle Yark, our executive producer. How are you doing today?
I am doing well. How are you?
Good, good, good. And across the glass wall over there, Slama, Dean Slama, our engineer, keeping us sound and balanced, and of course the music flowing. How you doing,
Slama? Oh, I feel great. It's good to have the whole crew together.
I know. Do you feel a little chilly in the air today?
Maybe.
Yeah, you turned the air conditioning up.
Oh, that's right. It must be.
Down. You didn't feel the sauna out there.
Well, I'm mentally getting ready for the fall season. I'm mentally getting ready for it. But I stopped at one of my local outdoor centers.
Like a garden center?
I was looking for some last-minute garden things to go in for. I had a little throwdown going on, you know, and I needed to kind of put some stuff in the garden. And I went. And the girl said, well, we don't really have any much. You know, it's the end of the summer. Mm. And I said, oh, really? I said, end of the summer. She said, yes. In fact, we're putting up Christmas trees.
No.
I said, you're putting up Christmas trees? She said, yeah, we're decorating. We have this big Christmas open house next week.
Okay.
And I'm thinking to myself, what month are we in? And then she says, so we're really into the Christmas trees right now. If you want to go to the back and look at some stuff, we do have some things back there if you want to just kind of go look. I mean, you know, it's kind of like the end of the season.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought to myself, wow, that's a bad sales approach. I mean, I'm just trying to buy flowers. Right? Anyway, I ended up, I got a wagon, me and one of the gardeners, and we went around. We did a little swing through, picked up some stuff. I got to the cash register, and it was $265.
Ooh.
Well, it was an end of the season sale.
So the concentration was on Christmas trees. I spent almost $300, and it was like, just go get the rest of that trash that's back there and bring it all up here. And go, by the way, go do it yourself. I said, man, serviceability. I said, I'm ready for Christmas, son.
So you got mostly flowers and decorative?
I got flowers. I got decoratives. I got some foliage that appeared to be prehistoric.
Ooh.
Oh, yeah, something that, you know, those leaves that look like the dinosaurs were eating them. I like that kind of stuff in my pathways, you know. So, yeah, you know what I mean.
What about your fall garden? You start thinking about that?
No, but it's got to go in this week. I mean, if I miss it this week, it won't be fall anymore. So I got to get
it'll be winter.
Yeah. In fact, I told my guys the other day, I said, I have this big group coming in to White Oak. It's like the International Gardeners Society or something. The first thing I thought about is I better get my garden ready. I better put something in my rolls over there. Otherwise, they're going to say, well, what's going on?
Tough here? Crowd, yeah.
Yeah, anyway, you know how it is. Well, anyway, you know, Michelle, it is. We're into September, and summer's officially over. And I do feel fall in the air, I'm telling you.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, considering that fall's not going to show up here for another couple months, I think I'll be able to ease into it, kind of slowly transition from the hot summer days into the cool autumn nights. Oh, we've had a busy summer season, though. All the LPB filming that we did, and I'm ready for a little chill in the air.
That was good, though. I mean, we did our fishing series, our first 13, and build this nice, beautiful pier out there to put my kitchen set on right over the lake at White Oak Plantation. I thought it ended up being pretty good. And I don't get too excited, basically, about all of the fall season, winter season, because this is a strange time of year, Slama. I want you to hear what I'm saying.
It's Indian summer.
Yeah, like summer's kind of over, everybody's saying. Christmas trees are going up. You're kind of in a place where Christmas really isn't here, but yet that's what you're seeing. And, you know, you're starting to hear jingle bells, and it's September.
Oh, I hope not.
School's in, and buses are everywhere rolling around. So it's kind of like, oh, let me just pull off to the side of the road and wait for October.
You know, I like to see the seasons change. And we've talked before about how the seasons change in the grocery stores. And thank God they don't have Christmas trees out yet. But, you know, you start to see the fall vegetables starting to come in. You're seeing the crookneck squash. You're seeing the pecans. You're seeing all of those green leafy vegetables. I love this time of year. It's September. School just started. There's nothing like smelling, you know, pencil shavings when you sharpen your pencil. I mean, how can you miss that?
Well, I guess you're right. I'm a little excited about what's getting ready to fall off of the trees. Actually, I was walking through, talking about white oak again. I have two beautiful pecan trees over there. And now, if you want the true sense of summer, you look at your fig trees. If you look for the true sense of fall, you look for your pecan trees. And I'm looking forward to all of the delicious pecan dishes and, of course, just the feeling of walking out there and picking pecans up off of the ground. My trees are full right now. Mm-hmm. I'm very happy about that.
I'm very happy about that myself. Pralines, pecan pie. Mm. Thanksgiving turkey with pecan dressing. I mean, there's a lot to look forward to.
Yeah, and I got a lot of pecans, I'm telling you.
You know, I don't think we've talked about pecans in a while. And soon we'll be seeing them at the farmer's market. And like I said, the grocery store aisles and the bins and already shelled in the plastic bags. And, well, that's one of my favorite kinds right there, already shelled and ready to go.
Just dip in and start eating them.
Yeah. Yes. But I remember, you know, my mama and papa, they had pecan trees. I can remember picking up pecans. I remember helping to crack the whole pecans using that little metal cracker. Of course, you always had to squeeze really hard because a lot of them are tough shells.
Those little bitty ones are.
But if you get the soft, what do they call paper shells. Ooh, I love those kind. But with the hard shells, that's the reason that we have those beautiful cast iron doorstop nutcrackers. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, you see them at the antique stores.
Sometimes you see dogs and you lift the tail, which opens the mouth, and you set the pecan in there and the dog's jaws close, crack the pecan.
I do remember all those nutcrackers, and I do remember that once you see nutcrackers, you start to think about the season again, because there's all these things that point out that we are in the season, and you mentioned nutcrackers, that's one. The Algonquins, I think it was the Indians that first gave pecan its name. They named it the pakan, P-A-K-A-N, which translated into this, a nut too hard to crack by hand.
That's why
somebody came up with the paper shells. It was the Native Americans who taught the early settlers, too, how to grow and harvest the pecan. And back in the day, housewives all had a set of those metal. They had a spring in them, the nutcrackers, and the little picks that came with them to take that little middle out. And when company was coming, the hostess would put out a bowl of pecans with, of course, the nutcracker and the picks for the guests, especially in the South, because it was a good Southern thing to have pecans. They'd munch on this healthy little snack instead of what we would do today, chips and nachos and things like that. It was a big bowl of pecans, and you had to work to get them.
I remember that. I always remember the bowl of nuts out for fall. But you were in the pecan business, were you not?
I tell you, my grandfather was, today my grandfather would be in prison because, he abused the child labor laws. I'm going to tell you right now.
Just a little bit.
Professor Rang, I'm talking about, loved him, loved him to death. He always had a covey of children behind him. No matter where he went.
He's an organizer.
Yeah, well, he was gathered kids, and he was a storyteller, you know. So he would start with a story and end with a job, you know.
I see you've inherited that trait.
So Papaya would, I was telling Michelle and them yesterday that Papaya would get us all around the table because he always had not one or two or three pecan trees. He had four or five or six of them. And then he had some wild pecan trees that had the little bitty hard shell. I mean, it took like, we would put them on the railroad track behind our house and wait for the train to roll over them. Yeah, that's how we cracked them. That's a true story. God, I tell you, I don't know, we didn't get killed. But Papaya would get us all around the table, and he would have us crack pecans and would always be looking with those piercing eyes to say, don't break the nut. I need the whole nut. My ma's making, you know, her famous fruit cakes, and we need the whole pecans. And so all of us would be sitting in restrained in these child labor chairs. You know,
labor camps.
Yeah, labor camps. It was like he had a special chair, like a baby chair that had like some kind of restraining device on it to keep us in place. Anyway, when we couldn't crack the pecans, he would go. He was an inventor, I was telling y'all yesterday. He would go into his shop and come out about an hour and a half after knocking and making noise in there, and he'd come out with an invention that would work for something he was doing. He made a wooden pecan cracker where you could just take the handle and push it down. He'd think about it, he'd go in the shop and make it. And that's the way we did things. But he was still very, particular, let me say is the word. Particular about his pecans, even though he had free labor around the table, he didn't want to make sure we were doing it right. One day, my brother, who was about 7 years old, got up and said, I'm done. I'm not doing this anymore. I'm finished. I'm out. I'm not cracking another pecan. I don't care what you do. I'm not doing it. He walked out of the door. And all the six of us looked at each other and said, can we do that?
You can't do that.
I don't think we can do that. I don't think we can do that. Can we? Can we do that? He just did that. Let's get out of here. And I think that was the last of our pecan picking season.
Oh.
With Prepares a Ring. But anyway, it was still good. Good memories. And he did teach us a good work ethic, I have to say.
He taught you a good work ethic. I'm sure y'all probably cracked a few and ate a few as you went along.
No, we ate a few and we cracked a few.
But you know, pecans are really healthy. They're a nutritious little nut when you start to really look at it. In fact, they're number one of all the nuts containing antioxidants. They're high in unsaturated fats that lower cholesterol. They're packed with 19 vitamins and minerals like A, B, E, folic acid, calcium, magnesium. 1 ounce of these little gems give you about 10% of your daily requirement of fiber.
Yeah, kind of like the one a day of the nut business, huh?
That's it.
You know, I'm a lover of history over there, Slama, and the history of the pecan can be traced back to the 16th century when it was the only major nut tree that grew naturally in North America. Most people don't know that. It originated in Central and Eastern North America and in the river valleys of Mexico, and pecans flourished in areas that were accessible to waterways, which contributed to the use of their tradability, so to speak, among the Native Americans. The first Europeans came in contact with the pecans. I guess it was the Spanish who did it first in what is now Mexico, Texas, Louisiana. Spain found the pecan, and then they took it, of course, to Asia, Africa, back to Europe, where the nut had never been seen. And of course, so we're going to tell you a little bit more about how the pecan went worldwide from America. We want to talk to you a little bit about the recipes that I'm going to share with you. We certainly have a great guest that's going to be with us. And of course, Michelle, again, we're going to talk about that Colombian exchange and how the pecans got to Europe, even though they were ours, and how the pecan praline came about as well.
Yeah.
I got to tell you that story with Ursuline Nuns, because it wasn't pecan pralines originally. It was hazelnut pralines. Y'all, we're going to see you back here in a second. All of us relieved. Crew standing, you put the boy down. There's great sensations on my brain. Mardi Gras and everything. I said praline in New Orleans. Hottest chicken meat. I said praline in New Orleans. Pralines in Orleans, that'll wake you up. That's I'm going to tell you something, Slama, that's a pretty good piece of music right there. I'd like to hear the rest of that sometime.
Yeah.
That's a good
he
one.
He did good, huh?
Yeah, he did really good on that. Anyway, welcome back, everybody, to Stirring It Up, the best tasting food and culture show on radio. And today we're talking about absolutely one of my favorite subjects, and certainly a subject of the season. We're talking about the world-famous pecan of Louisiana. And Michelle, we're lucky again to have one of our favorite family guests on the show today.
Mm-hmm. You're right.
Well, that's right, because this family has been in pecans for a long time, and we always call in on them.
Today we have Andre Bergeron of Bergeron's Pecans.
We call that us. Bergeron where I'm from. We call that Bergeron.
Well, that's
Bergeron.
Because you're, see, I'm from above I-10. I grew up 2 miles above I-10. Andre is third generation in his family's pecan shelling and packaging business. He and his brothers, Lester and Steve, are following in the footsteps of their father and grandfather, who built Bergeron's pecans to what it is today. Andre actually learned the business from the ground up. As a child, he would accompany his father on trips to local orchards to purchase pecans, or he'd work with the farmers who came in to sell their pecans. He also did his share of pecan gathering in the orchards, and I bet you he did some shelling. You and he probably have that in common. You probably both have a few little stories. Andre's a lifelong resident of New Roads, attended University of Southwestern Louisiana, And when he's not up to his knees in pecans, he participates in national cutting horse competitions. He's a member of the American Quarter Horse Association. He serves on the board of directors of the association, as well as the National Pecan Shellers Association, where he's a very active member, and he's also an active member in his community, as you can well imagine. Andre, thanks so much for joining us on Stirring It Up today.
Well, thank you for having me.
And congratulations, I think, are in order. Your family business is celebrating, what, 104 years in business this September?
That's correct, 104 years.
No. Good gracious.
Oh my God, 104. How did that begin? I mean, so was it just some small thought 100 years ago that expanded into what is so famous today as Bergeron Pecans? What is the great history of that company?
Well, it started with my grandfather. And he would take pecans to, like, these tenant farmers, and at night, when they would get out the fields, they would go and they would crack and shell pecans by hand, the whole family would, and he'd go back in the morning, pick them up, and pay them so much for whatever they shelled that day. And he would go back and pack them and process them and take them on a horse and buggy and bring them to the railroad depot and either send them to New Orleans or Chicago or wherever. That's how it got started.
So pecans were interesting to other parts of the country pretty early on, even though in Louisiana we just kind of considered them a great fall crop. He had already apparently began to understand that there was a great market out of the state farm.
But a lot of it, you know, was sold in the state at the time, but, you know, some would go out of state.
So I'm sure you must have your own pecan orchards, but you probably take in pecans from others as well. Is that true?
That's true. We buy all over the state of Louisiana and, you know, sometimes out of state, but mostly all of our product comes within the state.
Now, do y'all have a particular variety that's best for you, or do y'all buy all varieties of pecans?
Well, we buy all varieties, but primarily what we do is the natives, the small natives, which are very oily and very tasty. That's a big portion of our business, but we also get the improved varieties also, like the Elliott's and Desirables and Sumner's, you know, like some varieties that are coming around our area.
Mm-hmm. Now, is there a lot of difference? I know we were talking earlier, when I grew up, my grandfather had three or four large pecan trees, as I guess most people did in the South. It was hard to find a home up and down the River Road that didn't have a pecan tree growing in its yard, and people made great use of it. But is there a big difference in the variety of trees that grew in Louisiana, or was it one particular variety that just about everybody had in these early days?
Well, in the early days, most were the natives, was probably the most common variety. And then some other plantings came along later on. But your native was the oldest variety. I mean, some of these trees are over 100 years old.
Right, right. Do y'all have your own orchards as well that y'all pull from? Or you find buying from other folks is a better way?
No, we have our own orchard, but, I mean, it's not enough to supply us. You know, and we buy, like, from other people also.
How many pounds are coming through y'all processing area a year over there? And from all of your folks, are y'all processing all year long?
We ship year round, but mostly we shell from October to up in May, and we'll do 6 to 8 million pounds of pecans a year.
It's a lot of pecan pies and pecan pralines, huh?
Right.
Good
right.
night.
So they hold well once they're shelled, if they pack properly, do they have to be refrigerated or once they shell, how do you keep that product great till shipping?
Yeah, we keep them refrigerated, but they will have a shelf life without refrigeration too for a while, you know. But no, we have cold storage facilities, you know, on site. And we keep them in there, and that's how we keep them year-round.
Now, the pecan tree is pretty much, it's native to America, but pretty much native to the South as well. Do we find pecans trying to be grown or grown all over the country, or are they most prolific South, Mexico, Texas, Louisiana?
Well, right now you're getting a lot of plantings out in, out in New Mexico and Arizona. They're irrigating a bunch of land out there that they're starting to raise a lot of pecans out there now.
Well, you know, I also heard, I know a couple of big landowners, and especially some that have these large hunting reserves, and they're telling me that as they go in and cut some of these forests that they have, they're replacing all of the trees with pecans, because not only is it a great tree, but it's a great cash crop farm. So are we seeing the growth of pecan production in areas like this?
Well, you have some, but then you have some people that are putting land into row crops who are knocking some pecan trees down also, you know. So it's kind of maybe balancing out in some ways, you know.
Right, right. Now what about products that y'all produce? Because I know you're packaging fresh pecans or whatever and shipping those out, I'm sure, globally. But what other food products are y'all working with?
It's just pecans.
Just pecans. Okay. Just pecans.
Right.
Wow. Okay.
But do you sell to others that maybe produce like an oil or even? I know John talks a lot about pecan wood being a great smoking wood, right?
Right.
I mean,
oh, it's great wood. Yes.
So, are there any residual products from your trees?
You know, some people will come get the shells and want to barbecue with them and smoke with them and stuff. We don't fool with the oil. As one man who is producing pecan oil, it's kind of like an olive oil, and it's a nice product. But we primarily just do the pecans.
Mm-hmm. But I love the 1 pound bags that that you get in the stores, but. You package in boxes as well, and I can imagine that this would be a good seasonal gift, especially company gifts or something. Do you have a lot of folks coming to you for things like that, for clients?
Oh, sure, sure. We do a lot of that, corporate gifts for the holidays and stuff. It's really a big part of our business.
Andre Michella mentioned something a while ago as a cook, as a chef, and someone who now is looking toward more wood-fired grills and more wood-fired ovens in our restaurants. I'm building a new restaurant right now outside of Jackson, Mississippi in Ridgeland. And we've just put in 3 massive pieces of equipment that's all wood-fired. So we kind of going back to the 1700s, 1800s. And pecan wood is one of the preferred woods that we like to use, a nice hardwood, good burning, great flavor, etc. Is that a byproduct of things that y'all do, or do you know of anyone out there that you're buying from that also sells pecan wood for people who are interested in barbecued woods and smoking?
No, it's not a byproduct of ours, and I don't know of anyone right off. People just, I guess, could just gather their wood, such as firewood and all, but...
Well, look, the next time when a big pecan grower comes on in to sell his pecans, I want you, if you think about it, say, hey, y'all sell any pecan wood over there? Chef Fultz is looking for it.
Well, look, we have an abundance of it coming. So all the rain and thunderstorms every day. We got some falling every day.
So I just need to bring the trail, is what you're saying. And while I'm there, buy a bunch of pecans, too, would be nice. What about chef's restaurants? Where's the majority of your product going? Is it going into the retail market or pretty diverse?
It's pretty diverse. Retail, we do a lot of these institutional food companies buy a lot of stuff from us. It just varies. But a lot of institutional food companies, we supply them with pecans, and it that's been pretty good for us.
What I'm always amazed at, and part of the things we're talking about today, is how America has just been in love with the pecan for centuries, and yet we don't see a lot of pecan distribution going on in Europe. There's not a lot of sales from the information I have to European cooks, chefs, confectionery shops, retail shops, etc. Do y'all find that as well? Do you do any exporting?
No, we'll sell some stuff to Mexico sometime, but there's a big interest in China in pecans. And but what they're wanting like these big paper shell pecans coming out of Georgia and New Mexico, and primarily And they hand crack them and soak them in some kind of solution. And the Chinese are buying a lot of pecans right now. Wow. But they want them in the shell, and they want them big, paper shell.
Right. Now what are you, as a pecan a grower yourself, but certainly one of the largest distributors of pecans, if you had to say the top two varieties that I want to plant a tree in my yard, let's say, and I want to make sure that I have what the pecan experts would think of as the best, what would that be?
Well, in Louisiana, your number one variety would be the Elliott.
And why is that, Andre? What makes it number one?
Well, it makes for a good yard tree, for one, because it doesn't take the spraying. It can handle the scab. You know, you get this the scab resistant. It's a good pecan, and people really just love the Elliott because it's such a great flavor. So that would be your number one planting in Louisiana for sure. It would be the Elliott.
I was going to ask you about different pecan flavors, and I mean, John was asking about the best varieties or the favorite here. I've never really tried to do a taste test of pecans to taste the difference, but I'm sure there must be some distinct flavors in the different varieties. Do you find that?
Yes, there is. Like I said, that Elliott is pretty oily. It's almost as oily as a native. Your native has the most oil in it. And your desirable is pretty good, but desirables are hard to raise in Louisiana. They can't take the scab, you know, with the rain we get during the summertime and stuff. It's hard to raise desirables. You know, it'll take almost a perfect year to raise a good desirable, especially in South Louisiana. Your Stewart is another good pecan because it's a little drier. You know, it doesn't have the oil like the Elliott or the desirable or the native would have, you know.
Now, is the native pecan that you're referring to as native, what variety is that?
Yeah, that's just like the wild trees that you see growing, the big trees growing, like you said, down on the river road and all over in fields and stuff.
And those are the ones that tend to have the most oil. Which, does that give it the best flavor or the best mouthfeel? What is it about that tree that makes the pecan so good?
Well, it's got the oil. You don't have to spray it. You don't have to do anything to it. You know, it's...
And it goes under the name of Louisiana Native, or is there a specific name for it for our listeners?
Well, it'd be a native. What do they call a native?
It would be a native. Mm-hmm. Okay.
I'm making notations here in case I decide to put one in my backyard. So Elliott, native, and then the next best would be the Stewart?
No, I would say probably either a Sumner or a Candy.
Sumner or Candy, okay.
I asked Mr. Bergeron one day about 10 years ago, I asked Mr. Bergeron, I said, what's the two trees I should grow? I want to plant two pecan trees because the storm knocked down my pecan tree. He said, a Sumner and a Candy. And I planted both of those at White Oak Plantation, and they are beautiful right now. And every time people ask about it, I say, Mr. Bergeron told me about that. That's why it is right there planted. And that's the truth. I mean, those trees are just beautiful, I'm telling you.
Well, good.
They're beautiful.
Now, I want to ask about harvesting, though, because, I mean, to me, you harvest when the pecan hits the ground. But is that actually how the harvest happens? Or, I mean, are there other ways that you look at the trees and say, okay, these pecans are ready, and you get them directly from the tree? What's the right way?
Well, when they hit the ground, right, of course, you can shake them. There are shakers that can shake them, but they have to be just about ready to hit the ground when you go to shaking. A lot of it's done mechanically now, but there's still a lot of it done by hand.
Because shaking doesn't really hurt the tree. I know in the olive industry, they've been doing that for years and years, just coming around with those big, you know, padded claws and shaking the tree. Is that true that it doesn't hurt the tree at all?
Right. No, it doesn't hurt the tree.
It doesn't loosen the root. It looks like it would loosen the root.
Yeah, that looked like it would. Those roots are. Anyway, Andre, so this, we're getting into the greatest season of the year for pecans, and the Bergeron brand, of course, is going to be readily available just about everywhere imaginable. And what different shape, sizes, bagging, packaging can people expect to see your pecans in retail and be able to pick them up?
Well, we have the cello bags, which are 8 ounce, 12 ounce, and 16 ounce, and we have the 3 and 5 pound boxes, and then, you know, your commercial users will use like a 30 pound box. So it's we have a variety of packaging.
And most people can find your brand in most of the stores, I would imagine, right?
Right.
Right there, right. Usually right at the front when you walk in.
Right. Oh, you seem like you're pretty knowledgeable about all
of this. They have good space. Let me just say they have. Everybody fights for the end cap. They kind of got the end cap.
They own the end cap
in the produce section.
Well, I can promise you one thing. They will own the end cap for the next couple of months. I can promise you that. Andre, you're a good man. You come from a great family. I tell you, I have a lot of respect for what y'all do. And being a Louisiana chef who's used your product quite often, especially this time of year when my pastry department kicks up for pecan pies and pecan praline pies and pecan ice cream and you name it, I can promise you we're dumping a lot of Bergeron pecans into it.
Keep up the good work.
We do. We appreciate what you do. Y'all family has been an icon in Louisiana for so long, and I just encourage all of my listeners out there, as you walk through the stores and you see that bag and it's got that Bergeron name on it, that's all I'm going to tell you.
104 years in business. That's got to be good, right?
That's right. People ain't talking bad about them. That's all I can tell you. 104 years. Anyway, Andre, you have a good time. You have a good fall season. Wish you the best of luck on your pecans, and hopefully we'll run into some in each other on the street sometimes, okay?
All right. Thank you.
And remember to send that that fellow with the broken pecan limb to my place, okay?
Will do.
All right, Andre. But thank you so much for being with us. All right, everybody. That's a great family right there. And we're going to take us a quick break. And when we get back, we're talking pecan recipes.
You, that's all I want. Just a piece of pecan. Sometimes I get.
I was born down near Augusta, where I found myself in need. The mayor said, I don't trust you. I think it's time that you leave.
Man, I like that song, Slama. Piece of pecan pie, all I want is you. Well, I tell you what, Andre was kind of a calm and affected in the interview, but boy, I tell you what, he's the pecan giant, isn't he?
He is. He is. You can hear the humble nature of Andre, you know, just very humble about the business. I mean, 104 years, you know they have it going on.
Oh, no. They're a great company. And, of course, there's other great pecan companies in Louisiana as well. We shouldn't say that there's only one Bergeron. It's certainly one of the oldest, if not those. There's other great. There's Waterproof Louisiana. There's a great company.
Yeah.
Great company out in that area as well. These guys do great work. Anyway, y'all, and I know they do a lot of value-added products, too.
They do
a lot of pies and cakes and candy and all of that kind of stuff. So, yeah, Waterproof is a great company out there as well. And, y'all, what's interesting, I think, about the pecan is that it remains confined to the region where it was first discovered. When Bienville and Iberville came down the river and actually saw the pecan for the first time, and I think the botanist on the trip actually named it Coria ellinoides. It was the name given to it, the scientific name, based on the fact that it was found near present-day southern part of Illinois, named after the Illinois Indians. The majority of all pecans produced for commercial purposes are grown in the southern part of the U.S., as we mentioned a minute ago. Can you imagine that Thomas Jefferson is credited with the pecan's initial popularity, which doesn't surprise me at all, because he gifted George Washington with a pecan tree, which, by the way, George planted at Mount Vernon.
It wasn't the cherry tree?
It wasn't the cherry tree, and nobody cut this one down. You know?
And here's something that brings it all home, too. Before the mid-19th century, pecan nuts were derived from seedling pecan trees. But in 1846, a slave gardener known only as Antoine developed the centennial variety of pecan by grafting it They're on Louisiana's Oak Alley
That's
Plantation.
That's right, right next to where I grew up, right there in Oak Alley. Antoine did it. My dad was named after him.
Well, that's true.
Antoine Royley.
This initiated a pecan breeding program where pecan trees with exceptional characteristics were selected to establish new cultivars. And today there are more than 500 pecan cultivars, each with unique traits.
Oh, absolutely. Now, what about books on the subject of pecans? I know we have a couple of great ones here.
Yes, indeed. I love this one. It's called simply The Pecan, A History of America's Native Nut. It was written by James McWilliams. I love these one-subject books. Absolutely. We all know how essential this nut is in making all of our favorite southern desserts and sweets. And, I mean, where would New Orleans be without pecan pralines, for goodness sake? But the author takes us further into the story of the pecan to tell us its history and how important it was to the Native Americans who relied on it for nutrition and for sustenance, and how it found its way into the hearts of our founding foodies, just as you mentioned, Washington and Jefferson, who tried so hard to cultivate the trees. The author discusses the importance of the pecan trade as revenue, pointing out that 300 million pounds of pecans are produced every year, and China imports about half of that. Can you believe that? But anyway, pecans, definitely a true southern gem, as is this book. The second book I'd like to recommend has a catchy little title, Pecans from Soups to Nuts. It was written by Keith Courage and our friend Marcel Bienvenu. The authors have filled this book with mouth-watering photos of over 36 appetizer, main course, side dish, and dessert dishes using this buttery nut. They have included information on proper storage, information on step-by-step explanations on how to cook with pecans, and all the old favorite recipes, pecan pie, pecan praline, sugared pecans, and even some more adventurous recipes like cream of potato and pecan soup and pecan breaded eggplant, which sounds delicious. If you've been eyeing those packages of fresh shelled pecans on the grocery stores and didn't know what to do with them, well, you can find your answer here. So that's The Pecan, A History of America's Native Nut, and also Pecans from Soup to Nuts, two great, great books, great additions to your culture and culinary library.
And I have this beautiful little book. It's a small little book, probably about, 5x8 or something like that. It's only about an inch thick. The pecan, as you mentioned, a history. And it says here, what would Thanksgiving be without pecan pie? New Orleans without pralines. Southern cooks would have to hang up their aprons without America's native nut, whose popularity has spread so far beyond the tree's natural home, it's unimaginable. But as familiar as the pecan is, most people don't know the fascinating story of how native pecan trees fed Americans for thousands of years. Talking about the Native Americans, of course, huh? Slama, what about Facebook or anything?
Talking about social media.
Yeah, a little social media. Anything happening?
Well, we're out there. We're on Facebook, facebook.com/stirringitupradio. But yeah, a lot of stuff is actually happening recently.
Well, good.
Lisa Lutz, she came on, was commenting about the Gautreaux family farms. She apparently really loves that place, and she wanted to thank us for recognizing the jewel in the community that is Gautreaux family farms.
Really is.
That they want our PBS show we did. We just finished shooting our season, and they came on with all, 10, 12 children?
Ten children in the family.
Oh, wow.
They brought the tilapia with them, which is beautiful. I have a new respect. Let me tell you, as a chef, I have a new respect for tilapia. I mean, you know, a lot of times people downgrade the tilapia. But I'm going to tell you one thing. After traveling to their farm, seeing the way the fish are raised, that they're eating naturally what they eat in their own environment, that it is the Jesus fish from the Sea of Galilee.
Yeah, so we're getting some great fan mail out there. But, you know, we encourage our stovehounds to get on out there. If you listen to our show and you're like, you know, it would be really great if they talked about blah, you know, come on by and tell us all about blah.
It's a great place to go and tell us what you're in. And we do appreciate hearing from you, too. And we hear from you on the street all the time. People say, oh, I listen to your show, blah, 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 and I like this, blah, blah, blah. Well, send us some of the blah, blah, blah writing that says we'd like to hear something about
this. This is pretty interesting. Professor Hubble.
Yeah.
You know, Hubble had this little anecdote. He was commenting about our fig tree show when we were talking about figs. And he was laughing about how an anecdote you went on about, Chef, about how you're allergic, I believe.
Yeah, allergic to picking figs, yeah.
To picking figs. Yeah. And he was saying that his great-grandfather was actually allergic to fig tree milk. They found that out eventually, that he was allergic to the fig tree milk.
Well, I was too. That's what I was allergic to.
Well, he said that he goes on and says that his great-grandmother of the great-grandfather, so you go a little, right. It's a little out there, but she's actually a false.
See that?
So there might be some legitimacy to.
You see that? That's perfect right there. See, it's in my DNA. When my grandmother said, "You come out of that tree, Johnny, sit on the porch and let me get you a nice glass of iced tea," uh-huh, because you're allergic to fig milk. And then I realized that every piece of work, there was probably some allergic nature
there
to
you
it.
Go.
So I was able to kind of get out of both things. My grandmother's very sympathetic to my ails. Mm-hmm. So to speak.
Uh-huh. To your ailments. I'm surprised you weren't allergic to pecans.
I was allergic to picking them, but I found out that by eating them, you can build up, you know,
the tolerance. Kind of,
you can build up a tolerance of pecans. So anyway, y'all, I have I'm going to give you my recipe because everybody has trouble for some reason with a really great pecan praline. People struggle with it and they can't quite get them right and all of this.
But doesn't weather have something to do with making pecans?
Old wives' tales. You know,
is that right?
Well, I mean, certainly the moisture in the air, the humidity in the air does affect sugar. Anything that has to do with sugar building or sugar cooking certainly is going to be affected by moisture, humidity, things like that. So, yes, that it is true. But by the same token, as some roadmaps, if properly followed, will get you to the perfect place every time. And this is one example of it. And I tell people all the time that it was the Ursuline nuns who brought the knowledge of the great candy that we call praline to Louisiana. When they arrived in the early 1700s, their most important contribution was the gift of praline candy to the city of New Orleans. Although this sugar candy was originally made in Europe, in France, with hazelnuts, when the Ursulines got here, they found that there was no hazelnuts or anything that they recognized as a hazelnut growing in the swamplands, so they quickly adopted their candy recipe to include the native pecan. Most people feel that the original name praline was named after a count in France, Procelin, who some cook was making a candy named after him that was just burned sugar and hazelnuts. And then when the Ursulines got here, they decided to differentiate the candy from the European variety so people wouldn't confuse the fact that a praline would be made with hazelnuts. They created and added to the name pecan to create the pecan praline so people would know it didn't have the hazelnuts. But what I love about this recipe, it's kind of a dump and cook recipe. Dump and cook. You dump everything in the pot and cook.
Dump and cook and stir and stir and stir.
Yeah. So you're going to combine all of the ingredients at once, which I love, and the ingredients are 1.5 cups of sugar, 3/4 cup of light brown sugar packed nice and tight. So you have white and brown sugar. Mm-hmm. Into that, you're going to mix 1/2 cup of milk, 1 teaspoon of pure vanilla, 3/4 stick of butter, and 1.5 cups of pecans. Now, you can have the chop or pecans. Most people will do a chop pecan and put a whole one on top, which they like to do decoratively. But you put the chopped in, and you go from there. So you're going to mix all ingredients.
I have a question.
What's that?
Okay, so I've heard that some people kind of toast or roast the pecans before they do their praline. So do you do that, or you put
naturally? I go straight in because I want the oil going into my pecan pralines. And when you toast them, a lot of times you bring the temperature of the oven up to 300, 325. You put the pecans in it, and you render the oil. And I want the oil to go into my pralines to give it a really nice flavor. So I throw my fresh pecans in rather than toasting them. But it depends whether you like flavor or not. Anyway, y'all, so you're going to throw everything into the pot. That's what I call a dump and cook. You just pop it in there and stir like crazy, right? You're going to put a thermometer in. It's important, y'all, to have a digital thermometer. Why people live in this world without a digital thermometer is I just don't get it. You know, you can even use it to stick under your tongue to check your temperature. I said, well, sure you can. You wash it off real good. My brother never washes his off, but we're going to talk about that later.
Okay. Okay. So, I'll be sure and remind you of that one.
Anyway, y'all, the digital thermometer, you're just going to stir with that wooden spoon. You can use a wooden spoon. Just stir it while the sugar starts to bubble. And as the sugar bubbles, the water will be reduced out of the pot, and very slowly you're going to get to the point you want to get to, what we love to refer to in baking as the soft ball state, meaning that you can put a little piece of sugar in water and kind of rub it through your fingers and you'll have a little soft ball that adheres together rather than just dissolves in the water. That's called a soft ball state, meaning you've arrived at a temperature between 234 and 240. You don't want to get over 240 because then you'll start getting crystallization in the praline. So you want to get somewhere between that 234. And why is the range so large, 234 to 240? Because when you're cooking and stirring sugar, once it hits that point, it really goes up pretty rapidly. So you want to kind of catch it in there sometimes.
So like when you hit 234, you better be moving.
That's exactly right. Then you remove it from the stove. That's why I always cook my pralines with in a sauce pot with a heavy bottom with a handle on it, a long handle. Because when you take it off of the stove at 238, let's say, between that 234 and 240, you take it off, you lay the corner of that pot on a nice thick towel on your counter, and with that wooden spoon you begin to stir it really quickly in kind of an egg beating motion in the pot until it becomes creamy and cloudy. And this is what makes a good praline cook a praline cook: when it becomes cloudy, the sheen is gone and you kind of get this opaque look to your sugar, you'll notice that the pecans start to stay in suspension. They're not falling down anymore. What you're doing is cooling the sugar and adding air to the mixture. That's why it's clouding up, because air is being dispersed into the sugar while you're whipping it with the spoon. When I say whipping it, I mean just a good, like I say, whipped egg motion with your hand using that wooden spoon. It'll become cloudy. The temperature will reduce just a little bit. Remember, hot sugar is hot sugar. It's not going to reduce quickly. So the temperature is not going to reduce quickly. So you're just looking for that eye-appealing answer to your issue here, that it's creamy, it's cloudy, and the pecans are staying in suspension all of a sudden. Then you're going to hurry with that spoon, and you're going to take tablespoon size portions and quickly drop it onto buttered wax paper. And
buttered?
Just kind of butter the bottom of the paper so they don't stick onto it. Put the wax down so you don't have wax on your pecan. Just put butter on it. What are you doing?
No, I'm just thinking. I never paid attention to which side was the wax.
Yeah, right. You're just eating waxy pralines.
I guess so.
But anyway, you can also use butcher's paper or anything like that, baker's paper. Anyway, y'all, you drop it in spoonfuls onto that wax paper, foil, parchment, whatever you want. And like I say, if you're using wax paper, be sure to buffer it with some type of coal. Like normally you would put it on one of those, granite, because it's nice and thick. It holds the cool, and it'll set those pralines right away. So just drop those tablespoons right on there, and then put a whole pecan on top if you want. Anyway, y'all, recipe on the website. Just go to jfalls.com or go to Starting It Up Radio. All the facts and figures are right there. And thanks to Mr. Bergeron for the great work that he does in the state and for his great pecans. And pick up that little pecan, A History of America's Native Nut. You're going to love it.